You're listening to the Liberty Grace Church Sermon Podcast. For more information, visit libertygrace.ca.
Well, thanks, Daryl. I appreciate that warm welcome, and I'm looking forward to getting into the Word with you. Let me take this off first. And yeah, we're going to be looking at that text that was just read for us from Matthew, one of the Gospels, chapter 10, beginning at verse 24. And I want us to think together this afternoon about the idea of accepting rejection. And just in my preparation for this sermon, I ran across this article from a couple of years back that was dealing with the whole concept of rejection. And the basic message of this article was that, you know, it's pretty straightforward, that rejection happens, and it's not a very pleasant experience to go through, and yet it's a part of what we should expect just as human beings living in this world. And just to give you some sense of what this article was all about, here's a quote from it by a guy named Mark Leary, who's a PhD, smart guy who studies social interactions and social motivations, human emotions, and that sort of thing. And here's what he had to say about rejection. He says, "Concern with rejection is perfectly normal, but being excessively worried about it to the point that we do not do things that might benefit us can compromise the quality of our life." And from God's word this afternoon, I want to suggest to you that as Christians, as followers of Jesus, like, it's quite normal to be concerned about being rejected, specifically because of our association with Jesus. Like, part of what it means to be a Christian means to be like Jesus, and being like Jesus involves being rejected like Jesus. But instead of being afraid of the rejection that will inevitably come our way for following Jesus, again, I want to suggest to you from the scriptures that what we should do, rather, is accept this rejection that comes because of Jesus and persevere in the face of it by God's grace. And so, in thinking about accepting rejection, the point that I want to make is fairly simple. Followers of Jesus should not only expect rejection, but we should accept it and by God's grace, persevere. And in his strength, persevere. And so this text that we're looking at from Matthew chapter 10 is in a section where Jesus is giving a bunch of instructions to the 12 apostles, to that core group of disciples, as he sends them out on this mission of taking the gospel, the message of the kingdom, ultimately to the whole world. And what you have here is essentially a pep talk that Jesus gives. So if you are on your job and you are part of a team, maybe you've been elected the team lead on a particular project, and your hope is to say something to your coworkers to motivate them and sort of orient them to the task at hand, that's essentially what Jesus is doing. But if you didn't know any better, you might think that Jesus was actually trying to get his disciples to quit before they even got started. Because earlier in chapter 10, he says things to them like, in verse 16, for example, "I'm sending you out as sheep in the midst of wolves." And he says to them in, I think it's verse 17 and 18, like, "You're going to get arrested and beaten, and all of these really difficult, unpleasant things are going to happen to you." In verse 21, he even says to them, your family may very well turn on you. But what Jesus is doing, despite what it may seem like, is he's actually giving a very true-to-life picture. He's giving he's talking very plainly about real encouragement in the face of real difficulties and challenges. So his goal is not to simply say whatever he needs to say in order to motivate his disciples. He's actually wanting to have them get a real life picture of what it is that they're actually signing up for and what they're going to be involved in. And so it's important for us as believers to remember that yes, this mission that you and I are now a part of, along with those first disciples of taking the gospel to the nations, it's a glorious mission that we're a part of, but it's one that is not without difficulty. In fact, Jesus on multiple occasions will impress on us just how difficult it can be. It's glorious, and yet at the same time, it can be incredibly rough. And I don't know about you, but I certainly appreciate the fact that Jesus is very upfront about the difficulties involved in following him. There's no fine print. Jesus tells us plainly, if you want to follow me, take up your cross and let's go. Come die with me. In the text that we're going to look at this morning, we find Jesus essentially outlining what you might call some occupational hazards of being a disciple. So if you think about occupational hazards, certain difficulties and risks that are associated with particular jobs, well, there's certain risks and dangers that are associated with being connected to Jesus. But the aim of what Jesus says is not to discourage disciples. He's actually intending to encourage us to persevere in following him and in being faithful to this mission of taking the gospel to the world. And so here's the first thing that Jesus says. Here's the first bit of encouragement that might not sound like an encouragement. Jesus says, if you follow me, don't be surprised if people don't like you. And so notice what he says beginning in verse 24, and then we'll read the first part of verse 25. He says, a disciple is not above his teacher, nor a servant above his master. It is enough for the disciple to be like his teacher and the servant like his master. And so we start off with something very basic. Jesus says, like, as Christians, we are not better than him. And I could be wrong, but I think everybody would be in agreement with that statement. But what this verse begins to do is it gives us a picture of the believer's relationship to Jesus. So he's the master, we're the disciples. He's the teacher, we're the disciples. He's the master, we're the slaves or the bondservants. We submit to him and what he says, not the other way around. But it's not just as followers of Jesus that we submit to Jesus and to what he teaches. Whether you realize it or not, as a follower of Jesus, you actually submit to being treated like Jesus. Look at the end of verse 25. Jesus says, if they have called the master of the house Beelzebub, how much more will they malign those of his household? In other words, if you're a Christian, you shouldn't expect to be treated any differently than Jesus. And what do we know about the way that Jesus was treated? Well, for starters, we know that Jesus was incredibly popular. Jesus, without the help of campaign managers and brand strategies and all that sort of stuff, Jesus could draw a crowd with the best of them. Jesus enjoyed notoriety and the kind of popularity that a lot of people dream of, and most of us will never, ever experience. And yet, at the same time, Jesus wasn't naive as to how fickle and evil people could be. And so in John chapter 2, it talks about how there were all these people who were just thrilled that Jesus was doing all of these miracles. They loved it. And yet, at the same time, there were people who thought the very worst of Jesus. And so Jesus, in John chapter 2, verse 23, it tells us that even though all of these people are going nuts about him and he's racking up all of this popularity, John chapter 2, verse 23 says, but he did not entrust himself to them because he knew all people. In other words, from very early in his ministry, Jesus recognized that Palm Sunday could turn into Good Friday, like at the drop of a hat. Even in the first century, Jesus was very accustomed to cancel culture. And so Jesus is no stranger to how flighty people could be. One minute they loved him and the miracles that he did. The next minute you had people that were calling him the devil, people that were accusing him of being in league with Satan. And the thing is, people didn't do that. People didn't say bad things about Jesus because he was generally a good guy, but he kind of had a bit of a mean streak, and he would go around pushing old ladies and spray painting people's cats and that sort of thing. Like, Jesus, all he ever did was good. Jesus never sinned, and yet people maligned him and blatantly misrepresented what he was about. In fact, the times where Jesus is accused of being in league with Satan, he's actually helping people. And so if you look back in Matthew chapter 9, I believe it's verse 33, Jesus heals a demon-possessed man who can't talk. And there are lots of people who think like that was great. They were really excited about that. And yet you have the religious leaders, the Pharisees, who insist, he casts out demons by the prince of demons. And this happened on multiple occasions in Jesus's ministry. And so in short, even though all Jesus ever did was good, like, people very quickly talked badly about him. And the thing is, it's one thing for us to look and see, okay, that was true of Jesus. But what we need to realize is that as followers of Jesus, we shouldn't expect anything different. So if you notice the end of verse 25, it says, "It is enough for the disciple to be like his teacher and the servant like his master." And I gotta be honest, like, I really wanna be like Jesus. Like, that's God's goal for all of his people. I want that not just for myself, but for any Christian. Like, that's what God wants, that's what I want. Romans 8:29 says that we have been predestined to be conformed to the image of his son. But again, in the interest of being honest, like, I don't always want to be like Jesus in this way. Like, I don't like people who don't like me, right? Like, I want to be liked. I don't like having people talk bad about me. And not in a people-pleasing kind of way. But if I can avoid hatred and hostility from other people, I want to do that. And I think that's just normal. Right? Like, I could be wrong. Maybe there's someone here, but I don't know anyone who's like, they wake up in the morning and they're thinking to themselves, okay, let me see how many people I can get to dislike me today. Like, how many people can I get to unfollow me on whatever social media platform it is that you're on? Like, people don't normally do that. Or let me say, normal people don't do that. Nobody wants to be mistreated or maligned or have their name dragged and their reputation dragged through the mud. But if you're going to follow Jesus, there's a sense in which that's what you sign up for. Like, that's what you ought to expect because of your association with him. So don't be surprised when that sort of stuff comes your way. And it's possible that at this point you're thinking to yourself, okay, now some things are starting to make sense. I'm beginning to understand why it is that people don't like me. It's because I'm a Christian. Maybe, but not necessarily. If we're honest, there are some of us at times, the reason that people don't like us is not because we're Christians, it's because we're just not that pleasant to be around. And that's putting it nicely. 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 15 and 16 says, "But let none of you suffer as a murderer or a thief or an evildoer or as a meddler. Yet if anyone suffers as a Christian, let him not be ashamed, but let him glorify God in that name." In other words, if you're going to suffer you better make sure it's for the right reasons. It's because you love Jesus. It's because you are faithfully trying to follow him, and not because you're a pain in the neck to be around. And the truth is, it's pretty easy to be a Christian in Toronto. Like, even though being a Christian is never truly easy, but compared to, say, like, brothers and sisters in Iran or Somalia, like, we have it pretty good here. But it's worth us asking, like, are we willing to be misunderstood, or worse, blatantly misrepresented and maligned because of our association with Jesus? Like, do we really want to be like Jesus when that means that we're going to be at odds with the culture around us? It's easy to be a Christian. You can be a Christian in Toronto and nobody cares. Until, that is, your convictions and your commitments as a Christian start to run counter to, like, the popular views and beliefs around us. So what do you believe about sexuality as a Christian? And what do you believe about a person's relationship to God? Like, what would you do if the day comes when certain biblical teachings are legally considered hateful? Well, Jesus tells us plainly, don't be surprised if people don't like you because of me. And in 1 John chapter 1, sorry, verse 3, chapter 3, verse 13, the Apostle John, taking his cues from Jesus, says essentially the same thing, except he puts it more bluntly. He says in 1 John chapter 3, verse 13, do not be surprised, brothers, that the world hates you. Which doesn't mean, oh, Christians should have some sort of complex. We go around thinking, oh, nobody likes us all the time. That's not the case. It's like, you can liken it to being a firefighter. So if you're a firefighter, that doesn't mean that you're going to spend all day, every day running into burning buildings. But if you sign up to be a firefighter, you should expect at some point you're going to have to run into a burning building. It comes with the turf. It's part of the job. And in the same way, as Christians, it's not that nobody, like, all people will hate you all the time. But if you are faithfully following Jesus, there will come a time when people will say and think bad things about you because of your connection to Jesus. If you're a Christian, don't be surprised if people don't like you. But then, secondly, Jesus tells us this. So he doesn't just say, if you're a Christian, don't be surprised if people don't like you. The second bit of encouragement he gives to us in helping us to persevere, he says, if you're a Christian, don't fear people, fear God, and confess Jesus. So, after he tells us, hey, being connected to me is going to cost you in the popularity department. In fact, if you follow me, you should, in some cases, anticipate being treated worse than I was. Jesus next says something that sounds flat out crazy in verse 26. He says, so have no fear of them, for nothing is covered that will not be revealed, or hidden that will not be known. And so instead of saying, okay, things are going to get rough for you as a Christian, if you follow me, you should expect to be treated badly for my sake, Jesus says the exact opposite. He doesn't say, okay, you should probably lay low because that's how it's going to work. Jesus says, don't be afraid. Don't fear. It's almost like he wants us to see that being disliked and slandered because of him is not something that we should shy away from. And in some cases, it's actually a sign that you're on the right track. And so earlier in chapter 5, verse 11, Jesus says this. He says, blessed are you when others revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account. It's a blessing. You're in good company when that sort of thing happens to you. And then what Jesus does is he starts to give us reasons why we need not fear people, no matter how hostile they are towards us and the message of the gospel. Reason number one, Jesus says, don't fear people because God sees everything and he will set everything right in the end. Verse 26 says, nothing is covered that will not be revealed or hidden that will not be known. So God sees everything. And not like some casual observer, like I see you, you see me. But God is actually, he's taking a meticulous account of what's happening. And so the book of Hebrews, chapter 4, verse 13, says, no creature is hidden from his sight, but all are naked and exposed to the eyes of him to whom we must give account. So God will judge all evil, and he will vindicate his people. In the end, everything will be seen for what it really is. And so right now, it's not uncommon for Christian people to unfairly be labeled as bigots and hateful. And I'll be honest, like there are times when we earn that, those titles, but quite often that sort of thing gets attributed to us unfairly. And God's ways and his word are looked at as hateful or irrelevant. But when the judge of all the earth wraps up human history, like he's going to set everything right. And we're going to see everything for what it really is. He will vindicate his ways and his people. And so Jesus says, don't fear. Don't shrink back. Don't be ashamed of me and the gospel. Look at what he says in verse 27. Jesus says, what I tell you in the dark, say in the light. And what you hear whispered, proclaim on the housetops. So the good news of Jesus and all that he came to accomplish and all of his teachings, like this is not something that we keep to ourselves. It's not as though we as Christians are part of some secret society that has insider information that's just for us. No, the message of the gospel is meant for the whole world. Jesus commands us to make disciples of all nations and to teach all people everything that he commands. And I'm sure we all know this, but Christians can be pretty loud about a lot of things and not always the right things. And just in general, we live in a world where it seems like everybody has something to say about everything. But what would it be like if we were just as vocal about Jesus and the gospel as we are about the countless other things that we consider important? And just to be clear, like there are lots of things that Christians ought to speak up about, but we should never in the midst of that lose sight of that which is of first importance, the message of the gospel, of a God-man named Jesus who really came into the world, who really lived and died and really rose again in order to save guilty sinners. And as we take this message to the world, as we make that public, Jesus gives us reason number two that we don't have to be afraid of people. And it's this. He says, don't fear people, because the worst they can do to you is kill you. Which sounds ridiculous. It sounds really funny when you say it out loud, because everybody's thinking, like, that's pretty bad. But notice what Jesus says in verse 28. He says, and do not fear those who kill the body but cannot kill the soul. Rather, fear him who can destroy both soul and body in hell. You see, the answer to fear is not, okay, let me try really hard to be brave. For the Christian, like, we fight fear with fear. Don't fear people. Fear God. And again, it's like verse 28 is letting us know that our hanging on to our lives should not be like our greatest priority. As counterintuitive as that thing as that sounds, like we are naturally wired like self-preservation. Like I want to stay alive, but that should not be a greater priority than faithfully testifying to Jesus and the gospel. And again, this is coming from a guy, I don't like being disliked. I don't want to be disliked, and I certainly don't want to die. But we can't let fear of either of those things keep us from being obedient to Jesus. And I get it. Like, you think about all of the different forms that hostility could take. Like, people could, like, say, like, angry things to you and whatever. Like, they could be really mean. You could be physically harmed. It just goes on and on and on. But bear this in mind. Like, people can do a lot of things to you to harm you. But one thing they cannot do to you if you belong to Jesus is they cannot separate you from the love of God in Christ Jesus. It can't happen. And even if you think about it, like, even people's ability to harm you physically is subject to the sovereignty of God. And so Jesus is heaping up all of this encouragement to us. Hey, don't fear. Don't back down. Don't fear people. Fear God. Live in awe of him, to honor him. Let that be what motivates you. Like, live your life conscious of the fact that everything you do is done before the watchful eye of a holy and loving God. And then Jesus wraps up with one last reason why we need not fear people. So he says, lastly, don't fear what people can do to you, because God cares about you more than anything else that he's created. So check it out in verse 29 and 30. He says, are not two sparrows sold for a penny? And not one of them will fall to the ground apart from your Father, but even the hairs of your head are all numbered. And here's the point. Like, God cares for his creation more than the most ardent environmentalist or animal rights activist ever. And more than he cares for all of those other things that he created, he cares for us, people that he's created in his image. And in particular for believers, when we talk about believers, so he cares about all people that he's created in his image. But then if you think about the way that he's cared for us as his people, that he's purchased with his very own, the blood of his son. Just take that in for a second, how incredible that is. And how incredibly humbling it is that God would concern himself with us and care about us. God intimately cares for each one of us. And Jesus sort of makes this argument from the lesser to the greater, that God cares intimately and intricately for sparrows, little birds that back in the day people would purchase as a cheap meal, or in some cases, pets. Not one of them falls to the ground unless God says sovereignly, like, okay, that's what should happen. And if he cares like that for tiny little birds, how much more does he care for his children, for his sons and his daughters, created in his image, purchased by the blood of his son? He has an intimate knowledge and care for us down to the number of hairs on our head. And so I got my hair cut a couple of weeks ago, and God could tell you, like, to the T how many strands of my hair got lopped off. And each one of these little braids, God could tell you how many strands of hair is there. Well, because God knows everything and God is really good with numbers. Yeah, but it's also because God cares intimately about every single detail of our lives. And so it's important for us to bear that in mind. So if you're a Christian, like, consider how intimately God cares for you. Here's how much God values you and cares for you. Paul says in Romans chapter 8, verse 32, he who did not spare his own son, but gave him up for us all. God the Father did not spare his own son, but he gave him up to purchase sinners like you and I. That's how much he cares about us. And even if you're not a Christian, the Bible says, for God so loved the world that he gave his only son, that whoever believes in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. And Paul goes on to say in Romans 8:32, if God cared for us enough to send his own son, he says, how will he not also with him graciously give us all things? In other words, like, if he's done that, like, he'll definitely take care of us. He'll take care of us no matter what. I promise I won't. I'll try not to break anything. But he'll take care of us no matter what. And that truth, knowing that, ought to lead to us standing firm in the faith and identifying with Jesus no matter what. Because God cares for us no matter what. In the last two verses, Jesus says this. He says, so everyone who acknowledges me before men, I also will acknowledge before. I skipped over a verse. Jesus first says in verse 31, fear not therefore, you are of more value than many sparrows. And then he goes on to say, so everyone who acknowledges me before men, I also will acknowledge before my Father who is in heaven. But whoever denies me before men, I also will deny before my Father in heaven. Ultimately, that's why it's so important that even in the face of rejection, we as Christians persevere. Because ultimately, what you do with Jesus matters for eternity. That's why it's so important that we persevere. Like I said, there's no such thing as easy Christianity. It's not like a video game or something like that, where if the normal level is too difficult, you can play at easy and sort of play through that way. Christianity doesn't work that way. But there are ways that you can minimize the difficulty that you will encounter as a Christian. Namely, you can just try to blend in wherever you can. And, like, pipe down about Jesus. Don't be so vocal about that sort of stuff. But you can't continually do that. You can't continually deny Jesus with either your lips or with the way that you live, and then show up on the last day and expect that you and Jesus will be on good terms. Like sadly, people who play that role will hear those fearful words from Jesus, depart from me. But hey, Lord, we did this, that, and the other for you. He's like, I don't know you. Who are you? And I just want to be clear that the kind of denial that Jesus is talking about here in these verses is not, oh, I'm dealing with some unsaved, like my coworkers who aren't Christians and I'm interacting with them, or my family members who aren't Christians, and this opportunity to talk about Jesus and the gospel comes and I sort of get nervous and abruptly change the subject. Like, who hasn't, like, what Christian hasn't been there or in a similar situation? Like, we've all been in those moments like Peter, as hard as, like, preachers like to be on Peter at times. Like, we've all been there. And there's grace for moments like that. Just like where we see with Peter, Jesus restores Peter. But what we're talking about here in these verses is a settled rejection of Jesus, where instead of accepting the hostility and rejection that comes from being associated with Jesus, you're like, nah, that's too much. The cost is too high. No, thank you. I like my easy, comfortable life. And so I'm going to go on my way. And believe it or not, you can do that and attend church regularly. You can do that and like give lip service to following Jesus. Oh yeah, I'm a Christian, and all the while be denying him with the way that you live. You see, the proof of your belonging to Jesus doesn't rest in your profession of him, either in the beginning. So I want to follow Jesus, okay? But it doesn't rest in that or how many times you profess that subsequently. Like, you could say that as much as you want. The proof of your really belonging to Jesus is in your perseverance and in your clinging to Jesus by faith, and in your declaring, but with both, not just your lips, but with your life as well, that like your whole life should scream, like, Christ died for my sins and was raised. Like, that's my only hope. Like, that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. And so the Christian life is a race, and I'm not a big runner, so the racing imagery is kind of like, but it's one that involves an endurance, and it's one that is very difficult and often involves rejection. And yet Jesus calls us as his followers to persevere, to continue. And I know that doesn't, like, hearing that might initially sound more like a burden, than it might sound more exhausting than encouraging. And if your goal is to, okay, I need to persevere in my own strength, then it certainly will be more exhausting than encouraging. But here's the key to our perseverance. In Hebrews chapter 12, and this is where I'll close, Hebrews chapter 12, verse 3, it says, "Consider him who endured from sinners such hostility against himself, so that you may not grow weary or faint-hearted." So the only way for us to persevere in this race of faith, period, much less in the face of the rejection that will inevitably come, is by fixing our eyes on Jesus. And so I would encourage you to fix your eyes on Jesus. And when you find yourself struggling to do that, surround yourself with other brothers and sisters who will encourage you to fix your eyes on Jesus. And in those moments where you feel like you're doing a better job at that, like, find some other brothers and sisters that you can encourage to fix their eyes on Jesus. And so keep looking to him, and by his grace, keep going. Run this race that's set before us, by his grace and ultimately for his glory. Thanks.